D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 377, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Halish. I'm joined today by Kerry Holzman, co-host of Tech Vets and his very own awesome YouTube channel, where he shows you how to do many things in the computer repair business and some fun things also. Hey, welcome to the show, Kerry.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me, and thanks for calling my YouTube channel awesome.
No problem. I have not watched every video on there, but the ones that I've watched are great information.
You didn't watch my 9.5 hour video?
No, I didn't. Do you seriously have a 9.5 hour video?
In full 1080p. It's a compilation. It seems a lot of people can't get enough of watching how to build a computer. I don't know why. So I took a bunch of how to build a computer videos, which can run 1.5 to 2 hours a piece, and stitched them all together with a couple of short review videos. And it was basically trying, my goal was to have the longest video on YouTube, but YouTube already put restrictions in. And I think it was 60 gigs or 12 hours, whichever came first. So I think the closest I could get at 60 gigs was 9.5 hours at 1080p based on the compression I was using.
60 gigs of video. That's
but I wanted,
awesome.
I wanted 50, I wanted 50 hours of full HD.
Oh my.
And I was just going to let it upload as long as it took. I didn't care. Just turn the computer on, walk away, come back a week later and see if it's done. But they wouldn't let me do that. I was kind of bummed out because there have been videos on YouTube that have been 500 hours long, but they were nothing but randomized images and music. And I really wanted full content to legitimize the length of the video by saying, look, this is an entire class, if you will, an entire semester of classes all in this one video. And then you can stop it where you want and come back when you want. And ultimately pose a challenge out there to see how geeky my viewers are. You know, the real geeky ones are going to want to, and I say that in the nicest way, nerdy ones.
Absolutely.
We'll watch that whole 9.5 hours. I see it as a personal challenge. It's like, why did you do that? Well, why do people climb Mount Everest?
Right. Well, you know what, Kerry? Now you've piqued my interest. So I'm definitely going to give it a shot. And I'm going to, because, you know, it is weird almost, but I actually enjoy watching other people put computers together because I enjoy doing it myself. But it's neat to see how different people do different things when they're putting a computer together. That's awesome.
You know, that's what attracted me to the business, was to be able to do things my way. And when I first started, I remember asking people that I worked with when I got stuck for answers, and how many of those people gave me the wrong answer. Not intentionally. They thought they were giving me the right answer. And I learned, you know, who to ask and who not to ask, and eventually came up with my own processes that worked for me. And so what I wanted to do with the YouTube videos was to empower people to say, look, you know, you don't have to go to the fast food restaurant to get a burger. Look how easy it is to make your own and to make it the way you like it.
Right.
Absolutely. Make it with the kind of meat you want, make it as thick as you want, put whatever toppings you want, go crazy. Look how simple it is. And my comparison is basically, it is adult Legos at this point. It's not the days where you had to plug the memory modules in one by one and potentially bend the little legs on the chip every time you plugged it into a socket. It's not those days anymore. It's not the days of the SCSI interface or even the IDE interface with master and slave settings that confuse people, dip switches and jumpers. It's all gone. So for the most part now, it's really simple to build a computer, and people shouldn't be intimidated by it. And I think that's my motivation, is to show people how easy it is, that they can do it too if they want to. I can't make them want to, but if they're at all interested, they could even, for me, it was like watching a cooking show. You see these guys come on TV and they say, you know, put the yeast in the water and the flour and the bread, you know, and the dough will rise. But they don't get into the technical process of what's happening chemically.
Right.
And too many other videos I saw did that. It was overkill in information. I'm not here to make you a tech. I'm just here to show you how to build a computer.
Right.
So you plug this here, you plug this there. If it doesn't work, you didn't do something right. Start over. Right. Which was more or less kind of the chef food channel kind of thing, where it's you put this ingredient in, that ingredient in. But what I did is I show it in real time. What I don't like about the cooking shows is they're throwing things in so quick, you can't really follow along with them.
Right. That's true.
So what I tried to do in my earlier videos was to not have any cuts, to show that, first of all, there wasn't any video magic going on. And then I realized it kind of got boring watching me turn a screwdriver. So I thought I would just speed the video up in little segments. And I'm still trying to perfect that whole thing. Some people, it's interesting because some people will say, oh, and it really ticks me off when I do this. They'll leave a comment. This is, the video starts at 11 minutes and 26 seconds. Because for the first 11 minutes and 26 seconds, I'm talking about the parts. And they're not interested. Like, don't tell people to skip through my video. That information is there for them. If you don't need it, you know what I mean?
Then, right, then, exactly.
Then you skip through it. But don't tell other people to skip that information. It's kind of insulting to me that, you know, yeah, I wasted my time. So just tell everybody it's the whole video. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. But the whole reason for doing it was to simply empower people, to show them how easy it was. And the feedback I've gotten has been so encouraging. And as it turns out, a new revenue stream, which I never even considered when I started it. So,
oh, that's great.
So I really think I've always been a true believer in do what you love. Don't do it for the money. Just right. Do what you and because of that, I'm not rich.
Right, right.
Yet. Yeah. Hoping one day. But I do enjoy what I do, and I sleep well at night. And when I do my presentations, I go to like computer clubs and do free presentations. And when they announce your name and the audience applauds, everybody should get to feel that. Everybody should get applause when you go to work or when you finish your day. You know, like when I'm done with my presentation, the people clap. That is a feeling that I am addicted to.
Okay.
Absolutely love that feeling. It's better than any drug. It is better than, you know, there's just nothing that replaces that. Maybe I'm just a massive approval seeker, but that is like the best approval seeking, is when people are clapping afterwards. And it's such a great feeling. And that is its payment in and of itself.
Right.
And as it turns out, people say, well, do you have any business cards? And I say, oh, sure. Yeah. Here are some business cards. I didn't even think about it. And then they call me because they liked my presentation. They liked me and they want me to do computer work. Boom. Another revenue stream.
There you go. No, I think that's important to, you actually, because so many of us, you know, when you work a job, you don't really do what you love to do. You do it for a paycheck. And right. When you can do something that you love to do and get paid, you know, in long term, get paid those dividends or get paid for doing what you love, all that stuff comes back around. And I'm a firm believer in the more you give away, the more stuff will come back to you. And
you know what? I believe that too.
It's true, because I've lived my whole life that way, and it's always worked for me. So, you know, people go, hey, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to, you know, we'll pay you. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not worried about that. Let's get it going first. And then when the time is right, all that stuff will work itself out. So I'm not going to concern myself. I'm going to have fun in the process. And the other thing too, I think, is a lot of times as techs, we love to learn. I continually, even I'm 44 years old, I still love to learn. And if I'm not learning something, man, I am bored.
I'm with you on that. I call myself a puzzle solver. It's what mm-hmm. I do. And I love to learn about philosophy. I love to learn about why people do what they do. I love to try and see things when people are at a disagreement. I think I'm pretty good at understanding how they got to their side and explaining it to the other person so that we can find a common middle. Right. I think I'm a pretty good mediator. I mean, I can't solve everything, but I think I'm pretty good at it. I'm always learning about, but for me, the learning is outside of the computer. Like, I don't have any interest in learning Mac, and I don't have any interest in buying a right. smartphone, because I don't have any need for it.
Right.
I want to have a well-rounded knowledge. I originally was going to be an auto mechanic before I became a computer tech. And, you know, the other day I worked on my car for the very first time in a long time with my neighbor who works on cars for a living, because I wouldn't trust myself to do it by myself anymore. And we changed my power steering pump and we changed my front brakes and rotors. And I had so much fun and it was so rewarding. The same feeling you get when you build your own computer, that you've created this thing, that it works and you rely on it every day and it works great. And now you're not afraid if it breaks because you know how what the parts are inside. That
right.
You can go in there and not be worried about seeing unfamiliar. You have a point of reference now, I guess, is what I'm saying. That if you have to open the case for any reason, you're not afraid of it. In fact, you might even look forward to it. You know, people right. ask me about like surge protection and aren't you worried about things happening to your computer by leaving it on all the time? Like, I'm a computer tech. Let it do whatever it wants. Exactly. I'll fix it.
Exactly.
And it's funny because I talked to a mechanic that way once. I was having my engine rebuilt and I said to the mechanic, if you see anything that's even somewhat questionable, let's go ahead and change it. I'll pay for it. Just, you know, you got the engine out. Let's do it right.
Right.
And he exactly. said, well, you have to understand, I'm a mechanic. I don't really think that way. He says, I usually wait for something to break and then I replace it.
Right.
Well, for him, it's no big deal.
Right.
So I could totally understand that. But I'm 45 years old, so we're similar in age.
Right.
I'm also from Michigan. We have a lot in common.
Right, yeah.
Maybe whatever was in the water at that time. Let me ask you this question, a personal question. When the movie Star Wars came out, did it change your life?
Yes. And okay. I'll tell you why. Because, and I think I've told this story to a few people before, but I was actually, because I know we were talking before the show, I was actually up in Traverse City camping with my parents and grandparents. And my grandparents had just come back from seeing that movie. Now we're talking, this is 1978. And we're
was in it 77 or 78?
Was it 77?
It was 77.
77, yes. So right when the movie first came out, they had just seen it and came back to the campground. And so now this was my growing up. I grew up having to watch Patton, Big Red One, all the World War II movies, all that stuff. My dad loved that stuff. So when they said, hey, kids, come on, we're going to go see Star Wars, I was like, oh, are you kidding me?
Another war movie.
And that's exactly what I thought. So we got to the movie. I was blown away with how they put all that stuff together and made it so realistic. And I didn't even think about it till years later of the, you know, the different visual feats that they had accomplished in that film for that time. It was unbelievable. I was like, wow, they've really done something here. So yeah, that movie, definitely. I love that movie. You know, I've still got a box of Star Wars stuff sitting down in the basement, actually back from the original stuff.
Yeah, I have little trinkets. I got rid of all mine as a rebellious teenager, but ended up rebuying a lot of things off eBay okay. just to have it again.
Yep.
But I would say, especially for the younger generation who maybe doesn't understand, when I was growing up in Michigan, what I watched a lot of was Japanese animation, or that's what they call it today. And it was Speed Racer. There was Ultraman.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Ultraman was live action. And Johnny Sacco and his flying robot, yeah. which was another live action. And a lot of Godzilla movies, Godzilla versus yes. Mothra, Godzilla versus Hydra, Godzilla versus yep. King Kong, Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla. So when Pacific Rim came out, I was really excited. And now that the Godzilla movie's coming out, are you hyped up about that?
Yeah. My kid was talking to me about it, and I'd seen a little clip on it, and I was like, yeah, they might, because what was the one that just came out? It's quite a few years old. But the newest, the
previous Godzilla?
Yeah, the previous Godzilla. Oh,
that
to this
was so
one.
Horrible.
It was so bad. You know, there were some interesting
but
points.
But in all
to
fairness,
it,
every movie Roland Emmerich's ever made is bad. It just like Independence Day. We're gonna upload a virus to the alien computer. Really? So you have some kind of wireless connection to alien technology and you already understand their programming code and you can connect to them. It just didn't make any sense to me. And one of the things I liked about Star Wars, which is where I was going with this, is other shows at that time on TV, like UFO, Space 1999, everything was right. always shiny and clean. And in Star Wars, things were beat up, abused. The engines were burned, like where the exhaust for the engines were.
Right.
The things didn't work all the time. You know, when Harrison Ford, Han Solo would, let's go to light space and then nothing happened. And he'd smack the console like Fonzie did to right. a jukebox. That was so believable. And then all this new technology was introduced without any introduction or explanation. A lightsaber is just shown to you. A land speeder is just shown to you as an everyday thing. And you don't need an explanation of what it is or what it does. There was all these new ideas that were presented, and they weren't all presented at the same time. I mean, the movie starts out with a ship bigger than you've ever seen in your life. It just right. never seems to end. And I wish I could go back in time and look at the look on my face, because I'm a detail person. And I look at all the nooks and crannies on the ship. It looks like it's a real thing. It's not just smooth edges and everything shiny and clean. This looked like a functional thing. And so All the little detail is what I ate up. And what that movie did for me is, prior to that, I think I wanted to become like a chemist or a pharmacist, something like that, because I thought that computers were for really smart people in white lab coats, physicists and things like that. And R2-D2 and C-3PO put a comedy spin on computers that somehow made it approachable, that I could say, oh, I could work with computer. You know, it suddenly wasn't this mysterious box of math. It was now this functioning thing that somehow seemed attainable. Even though it was a science fiction movie, it just gave it a different look than the way other science fiction movies made computers.
That's a good point, because I never really thought about that. All the other shows that you would watch, a lot of them were, even going back to Star Trek, a lot
they're
of Star
very
Trek,
serious.
Very, very serious, and very everything computers does seem funny. Clean and right and organized, and you're like, and it just worked. I didn't think about, but that's probably what drew me into that movie. Is what I perceived at the time as realism, you know? So, that's awesome. I never thought
about
that.
That's how
much
of a nerd I was as a kid. And my friend who I hung out with at the time, we really got into that detail. We knew that John Dykstra was the special effects supervisor, and that he also did the Battlestar Galactica TV series. And as kids, as 10-year-old kids, we knew this. So I did not want to go to see Star Wars. My friend saw, he says, you got to see Star Wars. I said, it's just another Godzilla. It's just another King Kong. It's just another stupid space movie. And wow, it was not at all what I expected. Right. I mean, there was nothing else like that. And I don't know how many times I've seen that movie. There's very few movies I see more than once. And Star Wars I've seen into the, 50, 60, 70 times over the years. Sometimes this is how much it's in my psyche. Sometimes I like to let it play on the TV in the other room just to hear it in the background as background. So that's how
that
stuff
awesome.
I am. No, but it's just and so what this kind of comes around to is, there does tend to be some similarities in the attitude of techs or in the likes of people that are technically minded. And I think that's one of the things that we all have in common, I think, is that we all want to be, it's going to sound funny, what we all have in common is that we all want to be ourselves. We all wanted to do it our way.
Right.
I think it's important for us. What was the expression I used when I was a kid? That the guy made his own path in the world, or something along those lines. He marches to the beat of his own drummer.
Right. Yep.
I think a lot of us are that way. And it's why it's difficult for a consumer when they call a tech and they ask, what do you think is wrong with my computer? And they get three different answers from three different techs.
Right.
And they're so confident that they're sure that the other two techs don't know what they're talking about.
Right. You know, that's funny because, one of the things I always do, I will, when somebody tells me a problem, I usually will lay it out to, there are generally three causes. And I lay out the three causes, and I said, without looking at it, I cannot be 100% sure. So the only way for me to assess that would be to actually take a physical look at it.
Well, and I've learned to say that because
mm-hmm.
people will keep me on the phone that have never been a customer before.
Right.
I'm not making any money from it. And if I give them the answer over the phone, if I could, then they have no reason to pay me.
Right.
So ultimately, the nicest and actually most accurate thing to say is, I really don't know without seeing it.
Right.
Because you could be opening yourself up to liability by being the nice guy and saying, oh, I just changed your power supply. Oh, I electrocuted myself when I changed my power supply because you told me to, and now I'm going to sue you. The other thing is it gives them the opportunity now to start talking about, where are you located? What are your hours? How much do you charge? That's where you want the questions to go.
Right.
Exactly. Not, my floppy drive light stays on. Can you tell me how to turn it off? I'm sorry. Who are you? Did I build your computer? No.
And you still have a floppy drive? I don't understand.
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's other questions that, that lead up to that. But I, for the early years, I was giving away far too much.
Right.
I was being, I'd call it being too nice, but I don't think that's the right terminology.
Well, I think technicians want to be helpful, you know, and I think as we try to be helpful to other people, we really do want to help people solve their problems. And I think you said it earlier is that we are really, you know, you can say, you know, puzzle solver or problem solver, but we like to solve those problems and get an end result. But in doing that, we feel good about ourselves when somebody can be helped and they're on their way doing whatever they want to do with their computer. And then, you know, we're like, oh, okay, hey, that was cool. Plus you learned something from it. But I think there comes a point where you've learned something that somebody else is not willing to learn, and you should be paid accordingly. You know, you should still be paid a fair price. I don't think you should gouge anybody. I think you should give them, you know, good business, you know, and for a fair price. But I think that's what it really comes down to is just, we want to help other people, but we also need to get paid for the knowledge that we're sharing with those people. So yeah, because they don't want to do it.
I think that was another area where I didn't think really what I knew was worth anything. So I felt guilty getting paid what I thought was too much.
Right.
And as I've gotten older and certainly more experienced, not only with being more efficient and proficient at being a computer tech, but also understanding the value of people's time.
Exactly.
That holds value, that you can get in and out of there and fix it right the first time holds a higher value than the person who's learning and has to go back three or four times and you know, the customer can't use that computer the whole time. They're very inconvenienced, but they're going to pay less in theory because the guy's doesn't have the experience and doesn't have the confidence to charge more.
Right.
So, you know, a couple of the questions I get, and you probably hear this too, so let's talk about them.
Okay.
One is, how much should I charge?
That's a good question.
That depends on where you live and what your cost of living is and what your competition's like. So what I have to charge in Arizona is a rate that is actually under market. And if I lived in downtown Manhattan, I would have to charge a lot more because my rent would be a lot more. My expenses would be a lot higher. If I lived out in rural Wyoming, I would probably charge a lot less because the cost of living would be less. Right. So there's not a one number that we can give you to say this is how much you charge, unless your business model is like Lisa Hendrickson, where, you know, Call That Girl, where you're doing remote. And then even then, her prices are still going to be based on what her expenses are.
Sure. Absolutely.
So, but it doesn't matter if she's remoting into a computer across the states or down the street, it's the same rate.
Right. Exactly.
And people will pay for that convenience and people will see value in that because, let's face it, there are the large computer repair conglomerates whose names I won't say who gouge. They charge far too much, in my opinion. They hire inexperienced techs and they inconvenience the customer greatly at the expense of the or at the benefit of the technician educating himself. It's sort of on the job training for the tech.
Exactly.
And then when the tech gets really good, generally they want a raise and the company doesn't want to give them a raise. So they go leave and go somewhere else. So it's like, it's pretty rare that you run into somebody in one of those places that really is good at what they do, because chances are if you do run into that person, the next time you go back, they'll be gone.
Exactly. And what a lot of people, I don't think that they realize either, is if you look at the big box stores that do those types of services, what ends up happening is a lot of people don't realize that they can only do so much there. And, you know, they might have a disc to do certain things, or they can only do certain types of jobs. And if it becomes anything complicated, they're out subcontracting to guys like you and me, and, you know, through different services and stuff like that. But, you know, that's one of the things that they do, because they're not really, the company is about making a dollar bill. They're not about, you know, the end result, helping the customer. I've had, you know, terrible stories of somebody coming and, you know, they bought from a store and they had a laptop and, you know, unfortunately they dropped the laptop. Well, in their warrant, they bought a warranty. And I think it was even a, you know, hey, if you drop it or whatever, that type of warranty, they looked, they opened it up, turned the computer on and said, oh, your motherboard's bad. So, yeah, you're just going to have to get another computer. And your warranty doesn't cover anything. They brought it to me. I look at it. Well, the first thing I do is I power it up. And what do I see? A black screen with little white words on it. I go, well, it's going in the BIOS. Guess the motherboard's not bad. It just can't find an operating system or whatever. And then it would shut down. What ended up happening was the person had tried to fix it. So when they tried to format their hard drive and wipe out the operating system, it got stuck in a loop, basically. But the whole problem was when they dropped it, when I took the laptop apart, there was a fan pin connector that had come undone. Plugged it back in, closed the laptop.
Really, the hard
drive
wasn't damaged?
Nope.
Wow.
I reinstalled the operating system from the recovery partition. Here you go. Done. And they were like,
I think it gets down to the pride, really.
Right.
Of somebody who's what, there's two different kinds of workers in my experience. One of the clock watchers, and they're just there to watch the clock until it's time to go home. And the others are there because they like what they do. And of course, it depends on, I guess it really doesn't depend on the field. I mean, there might be somebody who just loves bagging groceries. They love that process of talking to people and being social and that. So the way I got started, because this is another question, is how did you start your own business? Was I was working at Best Buy when they first opened in Phoenix in the early 1990s. And they didn't have a computer repair at that time. When they interviewed me, they said, we're looking to start this. And you say you're a computer tech. Do you think this is something you can handle? And I said, sure. And they said, well, what's your turnaround time? I said, 24 hours. And they laughed at me. They said, I don't think you understand the scope, the size of the store. This is going to be the flagship store for the Phoenix area.
Okay.
And you're going to be the computer tech. I said, yeah, 24 hours. Okay, whatever. So at this time, there were no procedures. There were no tools. There were no screws, spare screws, nothing. I had to sort of create everything I needed to be able to do my job.
Right.
And I was given the freedom to do that. And this is back in the days where people would buy, it was like 386 days where people would buy multimedia kits is what they were called. A proprietary sound card that had an interface for a CD-ROM, because back then CD-ROMs couldn't just plug into the motherboard. They would plug into their own dedicated card, and Sound Blaster had a card that had, I remember one had three different types of plugs depending on the type of CD-ROM.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so I would retrofit these 386s with the multimedia and Microsoft and card, I think was the big thing. And you could see this little tiny postage stamp video with a space shuttle taking off and ooh. And obviously before the days of the internet. And the way I got started was there were certain jobs I couldn't do because Best Buy simply didn't offer that as an option for me to do it, such as needs a motherboard replacement. Best Buy didn't sell motherboards. So I'll tell you what, here's my name and number. I don't work on Saturday. If you want to give me a call, I'll change your motherboard out for you. And we'll go down to this other store down the street. We'll buy you a motherboard. And I wasn't taking work from my employer, so I didn't have any guilt about that. I wasn't stealing any business.
Right.
I was doing the jobs Best Buy wasn't able to do.
Absolutely.
And started getting more and more of them, and finally got to a point where I was like, you know, I think I can quit my Best Buy job. And it didn't exactly happen like that. Best Buy did something that really ticked me off, and that is minimum wage had gone up. So after my first year, I got a raise. I don't know, the raise was 50 cents or whatever it was. But then a few months after that, minimum wage went up. So I said, well, does that mean that my salary goes up by the amount minimum wage went up? And they said, no. And I said, okay, so just so I'm clear, if I was making minimum wage, which let's just call it $4.25.
Right.
Which is what some of the employees were making, like the people who run the cash registers. That's what they made, $4.25. Let's say I was running a register at $4.25. I was there a year, and I got a 25-cent raise to $4.50, and then minimum wage went to $4.50 2 months later, which means everybody hired new all makes $4.50. Do I now make $4.75 since I had that extra quarter? No.
Oh.
And I was so upset at that. And then the other thing they did is I was keeping up. I was doing my 24-hour turnaround. And rather than being praised for that, they said, we want you to start working a register. And I was a lot younger then and quite cocky. And I said, that's more or less, that's below me. That's for a high school kid. I'm not a high school kid. You have your high school kids do that.
Right.
And they said, you know, you know, this whole teamwork thing, da, 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 we all work together. And I'm like, no, I have an employment contract that specifies what my job duties and responsibilities are and what my compensation in return for that is. So if you want to change that, then we need to renegotiate the compensation to accommodate that. And it was like, well, why is everything with you got to be a negotiation? Just do what I tell you. And I'm like, well, this isn't fair. This is not fair. I couldn't do this to you. I couldn't say, well, I'm deciding to work 4 hours today, but go ahead and pay me for the 8-hour day.
Right. Exactly.
And the attitude is, well, we don't need you. You need us, which isn't really what is said, but it's what's implied.
Sure.
And I was like, you know what? I don't need you. And I quit. And that's how I started my business, because I already had those customers on the side. And that enabled me to pour more attention into acquiring more customers and calling them up and saying, hey, is there anybody else you know that could use computer work? And at that point, I was doing, I think, any repair for $50.
Okay.
And my thought process was, it's so cheap, even then that was cheap, that
right.
people will tell their friends, just, you know, you see something on sale at Walmart and you tell your buddy, it's not because there's anything in it for you.
Right.
You just think your buddy's going to be interested. Hey, you know, they got that on sale.
Right, exactly.
And I was hoping that would happen in my business, that I wouldn't have to advertise, that people would say, wow, this guy fixed my computer $50. He did a great job. He was fast. It didn't happen that way.
Right.
And there was a combination of two things. People often didn't tell their friends, or they would have a friend saying, I've got a problem with my computer. Do you recommend anybody? Oh, yeah, this guy. And then they'd call me and say, hey, I recommended your name to this guy. Did he ever call you? No. Well, if he calls you, I just want you to know I referred you to him. Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you. And, you know, 7 times out of 10, when I got those calls, the person they were telling me to expect the call from never, ever called. And it was like they were okay to complain about their computer problem, but when they were given a solution to get it fixed, they couldn't be bothered. And people would say to me, why don't you call this person? Why don't you call him? And I'm like, I'm not comfortable calling a stranger going, I heard your computer needs to be fixed
right.
from a mutual friend. That's just, no. That, you know what? If they want it fixed bad enough, they can call me. So I had these kind of social dilemmas in starting my business that I'm sure somebody else who's really just in it for the money would have no problem picking up the phone and calling and doing that.
Right. Yeah.
So exactly. I'm not here to say it's right or wrong, but just to share my experience.
Right. No, that's a good point, because, you know, even going back to, you know, we were talking about price earlier and, you know, even what you were charging back then. And I think a lot of people will start off at a cheap price and that's, I don't mean to use the word cheap, and an inexpensive price.
A very below market value price.
Yes. There we go. That's a good way to say it. So they'll do that in order to get started. And because of the barrier to entry, you don't really have to have a whole lot of tools, a lot of things you can get from the internet to get you started in computer repair. There's a lot of, you know, YouTube videos. You have a lot of them on your channel. There's other things you can
look
at.
There are today.
Well, exactly. When that's what I mean in today's day and age. Yeah. But a lot of times you got to look at how much, as you're doing this type of work, you know, and you're gaining knowledge and you're getting better at it, you got to think, how much is my time really worth? And I think a lot of times, a lot of people will get stuck in that undervalue role where they just keep charging the same price and people coming back to them. And something I noticed in my business lately is, because I was one of those guys here recently, I was offering a very inexpensive price. And I'll just say it, and I know a lot of people laugh, you know, $49 for a virus removal. Mm-hmm. And that was my advertising shtick, you know, on Google AdWords. Well, it was working. People were coming in. And wouldn't you know it, when I raised my price to $89, and the reason, part of the reason I did that was to kind of slow business down a little bit because I wanted to do other things. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, the customers were still coming in and they were still willing to pay it, because the bottom line is they wanted their computer fixed. Most people, they'll pay a lot more than what you think, because they want it fixed and they want it done. And those are the types of customers you want anyways. You don't want the ones that are going to, you know, nickel and dime you for every little thing. So, but I think it's very inexpensive to get started in doing computer repair nowadays. And I think there's a lot of people that are willing to help you. And that's one of the reasons we do this show, is to show, you know, people like Carrie and other people out there that are techs can show other people how to become a tech. Now, you also said something interesting earlier that everybody kind of does things a little bit different or their own way. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, this is the philosophy that I have is I call it the grocery store method. When you go into the grocery store, you don't pick every single thing off the shelf and throw it in your cart. You just pick what you need for that week. Well, it's the same thing with the computer repair business. You pick out the stuff that you can use at that time and you use it. And then you move on from there. And you'll learn things over time and become better and better at doing computer repair, you know, or IT, you know, IT support. So, but
yeah, I kind of follow you with the grocery store analogy a little bit. I have a different grocery store analogy.
Okay.
My story about the grocery store is that I love the grocery store. I absolutely love it. And the reason I love it is I feel like a king. There is nothing in the grocery store I cannot afford. I can put anything in my cart that I want. I don't have to, I'm not rich, okay? But I don't have to buy the generic brand if I don't want the generic brand. If I want real Frosted Flakes, I buy the real Frosted Flakes. And I put it in my cart. And anything that I desire in that moment, I can pick up and put in my cart. Where else in life can you do that? I mean, I can't do that at the auto, you know, at the art gallery or or at the furniture store. So there's this great sense of power when I'm at the grocery store that I can have anything in here that I want.
That's good.
And but where what you're talking about with your grocery store analogy, what I'm thinking of is people will often write in like at TechBets and they say, I want to start my own business. And they want to know all the steps to ensure they don't fail.
Right.
First of all, if that was even possible, good I would luck. Be doing you a disservice. So their fear is they want to be prepared.
Sure.
That they're not going to be prepared. They're going to fall on their face. So tell me how to ride a bike without falling down. Tell me how to swim before I get in the water. Tell me what hot means without me having to burn myself. These are things that cannot be explained. They have to be experienced.
Exactly.
I don't want to see you burn yourself, but there is no other way for you to truly comprehend the depth of the meaning of the word hot.
Right.
Until you've experienced being burned. Now, that being said, people say, what tools should I buy? I go, your focus is in the wrong place. Your focus shouldn't be on where should my office be? What kind of chair should I buy? What tools and software should I get? Your focus should be on how do I get some business?
Right.
Then go get the business. Now you've got a laptop to fix and you need a small screwdriver, a jeweler's screwdriver. Go buy a jeweler set of screwdrivers. Next week, you need a needle nose pair of pliers. Go buy the needle nose pair of pliers. You think about your desktop and you think about all the programs you've got on it. And you might have had the same conversation with a customer who's upgrading to a new PC and they want everything off the old computer on the new one. And I tell them, look, first of all, you're going to drive yourself crazy trying to put all this back on real quickly. It's going to be frustrating. It's a lot of work.
Right.
Don't put your printer on until you want to print. Don't put your Quicken on until you're ready to use Quicken. So it takes the pressure off of you to put everything back right away the way it was. And furthermore, if there's stuff on there you don't use, don't put it back on. And you know how you know you're not going to use it? Only put it on when you need it. That computer, all those icons on your desktop, you built up over time as you needed them.
Right.
Right? You didn't just get the computer and say, I want all this stuff on here that I'm going to potentially need for my online browsing and virus protection and writing documents and checking my email. You put it all on there and you didn't do it simultaneously. And I think you should treat your business the same way, because before you know it, when you buy that tool you need for that job and you have that piece of software you needed for that job, you will end up with a toolkit that is more specialized to the tools that you need and actually use versus going and buying the all-in-one tech toolkit, which has three screwdrivers in it you use and five other tools you never use.
Exactly. That's a very good point. Yeah, absolutely. Back in the day when I first started working on PCs back in 99, I had a Dell Pentium 2 400 megahertz machine. And I remember when I would go and reinstall the operating system, because I was learning how to do that at the time, I would take, this is no lie, literally 13 hours straight setting my computer up to the way that I just had it.
Yeah.
Guess what? Number one, I don't have that amount of time anymore. And mm-hmm. number two, I don't want to take that amount of time. So now I've become very efficient in just doing what I need to do. And I do the same exact thing nowadays. You're right. I don't add all those programs back in. When I need that program, I go and install it.
Install it when you need it.
Exactly. That's a great philosophy.
And before you know it, you've got 100 icons. Well, it's the same philosophy I use when I explain to people how to build a computer. One of the most intimidating parts is the wiring. And I always tell people, take it one wire at a time.
Yes.
Don't look at this big bundle of wires. When I was first fixing cars, when I opened the hood of a car, or someone opened the hood of a car, because I probably didn't even know how to do that. What I saw was a big block of metal with wires coming out of it. Okay. After I learned how to work on a car, I now see a water pump and a power steering pump and an alternator and a radiator and a fan and a clutch, fan clutch and valve covers and valves and pistons and crankshaft and camshaft. And I don't just see a big block of metal anymore with wires coming out of it.
Right.
And if you look behind anybody's home entertainment system, which is the most common one, it looks like a big tangle of confusing wires back there. They've got wires running from the cable to the cable box, to the TV, to the stereo, to the speakers. What a mess of cables. But when you hooked all that up, you did it one cable at a time. And before you know it, you had this big, very intimidating bundle of cables. Walk into any server room and you see all these patch cables and it's like, wow, that is so messy and confusing and intimidating. I will say that clean wiring, server room included, engines included, entertainment centers included, make for easier diagnosing and replacement of a specific part, because you can automatically know this is the cable I need to unplug. I can clearly see where it goes. It takes a little more time, but ultimately that saves you time later in theory. Right. Some people just are so anxious to want to get their computer running that they... And I always tell people, enjoy the build process. Don't worry about once it, because it'll run for years and years and years. You're only going to build it this one day. So take your time. Don't force anything. If it doesn't fit, don't force it. Everything should click together easily. So that's how you're going to break something, is putting too much force on it.
Right.
And again, when it comes to the wires, one wire at a time. When it comes to the programs, install them as you need them. If you need your printer right away, go ahead and install your printer.
Right.
If you need your email right away, let's get your... And that's what I do for my customers. If they're buying a new computer, I go, look, if you provide me with any software you want reinstalled, give it to me now along with your product keys, and I'll take care of that while I've got it off-sited. And I don't care what it is. You can give me a pile of discs, 12, 15 discs. I don't care, because I'm just going to set it and walk away and come back, and, you know, versus being stuck at the customer's house for hours installing software. So I tell the customer, when I drop the computer off, we're going to hook this up. I'm going to hook it up for them, because that's the other thing customers often get intimidated about. Again, we get back to the wires.
Right.
Even though most stuff only plugs in one place. And I tell them, check the most. And please take a moment. I want you to sit at the chair. Take over the keyboard and mouse. I'm not going to touch anything. And I want you to check the things that are most important to you. So what's most important to you? Email? Yeah, let's check your email. Is it working? Yeah, it's working. You want to make sure your pictures are there? Let's check and make sure your pictures are there. Yeah, okay. Okay, so everything else you're good on, right? Everything else is, yep, okay. Then I have remote access. So if you run into anything that you have trouble with installing yourself or run into any barriers, just give me a call. And that's easily taken care of remotely.
Right.
When you, the old expression, don't cross that bridge until you get to it.
That's a good way to live by. I think that makes it a little less intimidating for, you know, people just starting out. You know, to take it one step at a time. And
it's,
you know,
easy to be overwhelmed.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, and when I think back to when I started first working on the insides of a PC, you know, it was the first thing I did was I would upgrade my RAM, because it had, you know, whatever, 128 megs of RAM at the time, you know, and I knew I could put two sticks in there and, you know, get 256 out of that bad boy. And, you know, so I'd stick a RAM in there, and then maybe I wanted to play video games or something. So I'd get a video card that I could plug into the PCI slot at the time. And I kind of just did that. And I, you know, downloaded the drivers, installed the drivers. It made me aware of what was involved inside the computer and software wise on a computer to make things work. And I just, you know, slowly learned over time how things can work in a logical manner, but that sometimes they don't always work, you know, when you first do them. And sometimes that's where the troubleshooting comes in.
But I have found, tell me if you found this to be true. I will often get customers who say, I've got a problem with my computer. I'm sure it's something I did. I'm an idiot when it comes to computers. And it's nothing they did. It's something wrong with the computer.
Yeah.
And then there's guys like me and you who go, darn it, there's something wrong with this computer. It's really ticking me off. And we're doing something wrong. And we're too self-assured and confident to recognize that, you know, it's quick to blame the computer.
Yeah, not my computer.
It's like it's flipped backwards.
That is true. Yeah. You know what? As a matter of fact, I was working on my computer today, and I was running some different diagnostic programs, just playing around with them. And I'd done something really weird and I don't know. And it created a bunch of icons and I had never seen it before. And so I'm sitting here trying to clean stuff up and it looks like I'm making it worse. And I'm like, man, I said, you know, and of course, what do? Well, that program that I use, that did it.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Not that I used the program wrong, which I did. And, you know, and it had side effects.
So. Yeah, I just, that's something I've noticed in myself. And with dealing, there's a large senior community out here, and they're very quick to just blame themselves because they're, we call them digital immigrants, right? They weren't brought up with this stuff.
And sure.
They just assume they did something wrong when it's like, oh, no, this wasn't your fault at all. This was a...
Yeah.
You know, whatever. And I'm curious, how do you handle this question? Because this is I have a tough time with this. You fix somebody's computer and they say, how do I keep that from happening again? Or how did I get that virus? Because I don't know how they got that. How would I know?
Well, you know, I explain a couple of different things to people when it comes to stuff like that. I said, listen, whatever antivirus we put on here, number one, is a defense tool. It's not going to stop everything. And here's why I say that, because most of these viruses are socially engineered, meaning that they want you, they're trying to make you click on something. And I said, a lot of times it's not your fault. You get an email from a friend and it has a little link in there. And I tell them, I said, listen, I said, the best way to do that is just copy that link, you know, show them how to do it, copy and paste. Because most people do know, even the older ones, do know how to copy and paste and drag it in here, or just don't click, you know, drag it in the browser and launch it from there, or just don't click on it at all. I said, that's probably your best bet. And I said, as far as when you get a pop-up or something like that, I always tell people, listen, that big window that just popped up to you, in front of you and said, you're infected, you need to do something now, or you're in trouble or whatever. They want you to click anywhere on that window. So you're a smart enough person, I know, that you're going to go see that little red X up in the corner and you're going to just shut that window down because you know it's baloney. Okay, fine. I said, the problem is when you click on that window anywhere, you launch the program in the background. And that's how you got infected. So what I always tell people is I said, go down to the start bar, shut your computer down, restart it back up, go online and finish doing whatever you were doing. You know, I try to avoid things.
But the question is, how did I get this virus? The one you just took off, what did I do?
Well, and that's in it. And you're right. It's one of the things that you basically say is I really don't know how you got this particular one.
Because the logic is I don't want to do that again. So if you could just tell me what I did, I'll make sure I don't do it again.
And that's why it's very hard, because sometimes you just paint broad strokes for, you know, let's face it, even in today's day and age, I think a lot of viruses are still done by email. There's a lot of people that are still, you and I maybe we don't use email as much anymore. I mean, I use it for a communication tool, but I don't necessarily live in email.
Oh, I live in email.
Oh, do you? Okay. Well, I try not to.
The time we've been talking, 70 messages.
Okay.
Now, 60 of them are spam, but that's beside.
Okay. You're a little different boat than I. Yeah, most of mine just goes into a spam filter. But anyways, so if you look at the only thing you can really tell your customer is ways to avoid the broad spectrum of how you get infected, because really there's no way to tell. You know, I can't tell them, don't go on your Flash games page. you know, right. where you like play Sudoku and checkers and euchre and all that. I can't tell them that. Well, the reality is sometimes you get infected through those things. I said, you know, I think the other thing that I'm dealing with now too is what I'm understanding is I do a really, really good job of cleaning a computer. Once I clean that computer, I can tell you that that computer probably starts getting infected with, you know, either viruses or malware probably within the first month. Nothing I've done wrong, nothing I've done, but usually when people bring me their computers, they've been infected longer than that one thing that broke Internet Explorer and they can't get on the internet anymore.
Right.
So I think one of the things that I'm really leaning towards is managed services. And what I'm going to do on virus removals now is I'm going to sell a service to these people to maintain their computer. I can remote in the computer, do what I need to do, keep it clean. Because now I'm even getting people that have paid other people for that service, and they're starting to ask me, hey, do you have something like that? And
to me, it's definitely a trend that's moving in that direction. I think it's a smart business decision.
Right.
But I have to ask you, what antivirus, when someone brings you their computer for virus removal, do you change their antivirus out, or is there one, what do you do when you give the computer back to help them to prevent it from happening again?
Well, there's a couple things. Okay, so if you're with any of the big providers in this area for your internet, Comcast, Wow, you know, any of those types, actually probably even the smaller ones, pretty much most of them will have a free antivirus. A lot of people are using the one that came with a computer that lasts for 60 days and hasn't been updated in a year and a half.
Right.
And so I've seen that. I see it all the time. So of course their computer's infected. The antivirus, you know, it says, hey, we're still working, but really they're not. And so a lot of times what I used to do in the past is it would leave my shop with no less than at least Microsoft Security Essentials. Because personally, I've got 10 machines running here with 5 kids and a wife and all kinds of stuff. And to be honest, I've used Microsoft Security Essentials on all those machines and everybody's still fine years later. So not to say that other people aren't doing things that they could get them infected, but I think Microsoft Security Essentials works good enough. But I give them the option. And I always tell them, I said, well, there's a couple things we can do, because sometimes people will come in and they actually do have a subscription for an antivirus. And I'll say, well, it's got 120 days left. I said, we can put that back on. Do you plan? And I always ask them, do you plan on paying for this again? And if they tell me yes, then I'll put that one on there and make sure that it's updated and you know, send them on down the road. I probably should check back with them in 6 months when it does go out and either sell them an antivirus or make sure that they renew their subscription. But you know, a lot of times, or I'll tell them if they're with the big providers, I will tell them we can download this from your provider and they give it to you for free as part of your service that you pay them for. And we can put that on there. The thing I don't like about the ones that are with the providers, McAfee and Norton, is it's not as bad with the newer systems, but they're still extremely heavy on the systems. And it just makes
they get into
everything
everywhere.
Frustrating to, oh, I got to click on this window and I'm waiting. Oh, come on.
I'm struggling on an 8.1 system. I cannot get McAfee off. I got the removal tool. The removal tool is just freezing up.
Oh. It's
very frustrating.
Oh.
But is there anything else besides Microsoft Security Essentials that you would use or that you put on the machines?
There's nothing at this point. And right now I'm doing some tests with certain antivirus. Right now on my bench machine, I downloaded, and I've done this in the past, but I'm rechecking them out, is ESET's NOD32.
Mm-hmm. I've heard good things about it.
So have I for many years. And I'll be honest with you, it runs buttery smooth. And when I was doing some offline checks on some hard drives, it was not only catching if there was any viruses, but a lot of your toolbars, malware, all kinds of junk. I'm like, wow. And this was just the virus removal. It wasn't the internet security or anything like that, just a virus removal product.
Right.
And I was like, wow. So I was impressed with that. I'm seriously considering selling some sort of antivirus. The problem is, it's like anything else. You know, people ask me, what kind of computer should I buy? I'm like, it changes month to month, year to year. I don't know. You know, it's very hard for me to make that decision for you. I said, you could buy a Dell, HP. They all got a year warranty. you know, they'll cover it, whatever. Kind of the same thing with antivirus. I really need a good antivirus, but my concern is that an antivirus is good today. When I go to renew subscriptions, is it going to be good from a year from now?
Good point.
You know, so that's the things I think about. But I really think that, especially if you're doing any type of managed services, I really think you should have your, if at least you learn how to use an antivirus very well, you'll know the different tips and tricks behind getting it to work and making it, you know, as smooth as possible for people. That's my two cents on the whole antivirus thing.
Yeah, anyways. I was curious about it because I have an attitude about antivirus that anybody who's listened to me over the years has heard before, but for the benefit that hopefully we're getting some new listeners who haven't heard me before.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
My feeling, and it may be because I've been watching a lot of Boardwalk Empire lately, but my feeling is that actually I've had this attitude for a long time that the pay for protection software companies are not any different than the mafia was in the 1920s during Prohibition.
Okay. That's a good point.
They go like this. Imagine, hey, how you doing? You got a pretty nice computer here. It'd be a shame if something were to happen to it. Now, here's the problem. That antivirus is going to expire. So you're going to get that knock on the door again. It's time for you to renew.
Right.
Accidents happen. Right? And you're being extorted to get nothing. What other business model do you pay to get nothing? I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to open a restaurant. And I'm going to feed you steaks until you pay me to stop.
Right.
In what other economy do you get paid to not get something? You usually exchange money for goods and services.
Right.
In this case, you're paying to not get something.
Right, right.
Right? So I'm like, well, where else does that apply in the world? So I have a problem morally and ethically with that.
Okay.
Now, a good business person will have their own antivirus that they support and sell. Unfortunately, that also burdens you with repairing every computer that gets a bad update that causes their computer to not boot. And that's now your responsibility because you recommended it and you profited from selling it to the customer. And they're going to expect you to fix that. Malwarebytes had that happen. I think every antivirus company has had that happen at some point where there's been some devastating update that caused catastrophic failure on the PC. And now if you've sold that to every one of your customers, then every one of your customers is going to overwhelm you at once.
Right.
And everybody wants it fixed yesterday. So when you're a small time, you know, like me, I'm a one-man shop.
Right. Yep.
So here's what I do. The problem with Microsoft Security Essentials is that it's crap. All right. There's no argument or debate about it. When it comes to antivirus software, there probably isn't anything worse other than maybe ClamWin or something like that, where you have to run it manually.
Right. Okay.
Okay. So the problem with the free ones is they do a lot of pop-ups and advertising. And every year they want you to remove it and install the latest version, which the customers never do. And then they hide the free version. AVG customers would call me and say, the free one's not available anymore. What do I do? And say, no, it is still. You've got it hidden. You didn't really.
Right.
The way they phrased it was you interpreted it. They wanted you to interpret that way. But no, the free. And it's buried and you have to find it. And then, you know, like Avast and others, you get these annoying pop-ups. They don't leave you alone. And then you got the paid ones. And the paid ones, you go, well, it's time to remove it and uninstall the latest version. It's time to pay up again.
Right.
So here's what I do. I put on Microsoft Security Essentials, but not by itself because it's crap.
Okay.
I put in a paid version of Malwarebytes, and I bought a bunch of lifetime licenses really, really cheap so I can just give them away as part of my service so I don't have to wait for my customer to do it. And I think Malwarebytes really does a great job of catching everything.
Yep.
I mostly am putting Security Essentials on just to please Microsoft Security Center so it doesn't say you don't have an antivirus.
Right.
Okay. It never gives you pop-ups. It never needs you to uninstall it and reinstall the latest version. It doesn't try to convince you to buy the more advanced. It's just quiet. It's low resources. It's out of the way, easy to forget.
Right.
Which is what we want.
Yep.
Absolutely. Malwarebytes with the paid license isn't a resource hog, has a very good detection rate. The Malwarebytes Chameleon program is wonderful to have on a computer that's infected because it can right. often start when other things won't start. And then finally, I add Web of Trust. Have you heard of Web of Trust?
Yes. Yep.
So great free browser add-on. Unfortunately, you have to, if they have three browsers, you have to install it three times. Open each browser, go to Web of Trust, download, and add it to the browser. And you'll get like a traffic light on a Google search next to each link. It'll be red, yellow, green, telling you how the community, not a company, but how the community has rated certain websites. And if you just aren't even paying attention and you click on one that's red, you get a notification that the site you're trying to go to has a poor rating. And if you still want to go there, click here. And I always tell people, and if you do that, don't call me.
Okay.
Or it says go back, right? So you should hit the go back button because whatever you're trying to find on the internet will be somewhere else. I assure you, there's not just any one location. So go to one that is safe. And what I like about the Malwarebytes is that when the customer does click on something, it pops up immediately and says, this is an infection. Now they know what they did. They don't have to ask me, what did I do?
That's
they
a good can, point.
They know immediately right. what they just did to cause that reaction. And they know not to do that anymore. So I don't have to educate them. They can learn the same way I did. Now, since no antivirus can protect you 100%, how does Microsoft's free security essentials really vary from Norton or McAfee or ESET or any of the others? Well, the detection rate's higher on the others. Okay, but that's all well and good if you have a virus that falls into their detection.
And
it's like saying
month.
It's like saying to me, yeah, or this hour of this day.
Exactly.
They say over 75,000 new viruses are released to the internet each and every day. And even though most of those are just modifications of existing viruses, sure. they're changed enough to that they have a separate fingerprint to be identified.
Right.
So what I tell people is, look, you could say airline travel is the safest way to travel, but that's of little comfort to somebody who's lost a loved one in an airline accident.
Right.
So if none of them can protect you 100%, why are you paying for it? Why not get the free one? If you can get the Malwarebytes license, especially the lifetime license, combined with the Web of Trust, you're good for the life of that computer. You will never again have to pay. And by the way, if you ever get a pop-up that says you've got a virus and it costs money to remove, you know it's not real because nothing on your computer right now will ever do that and ever will.
Right.
So you don't have to wonder. You don't have a decision to make, a judgment to make. You know for a fact, he told me, Kerry told me, that if I ever see anything that says it costs money to remove, that's fake because nothing I've got will do that.
Right.
So that makes it easier on the end user. And now guess what? You don't have to pay protection money ever again for the life of that computer. Think of what you could do with that money. That pays for me right there. I just more than made up for whatever I charged you for the years of savings you're now going to have. Now, that's not to say nobody ever gets infected again. But right. with those three things combined with making sure all the latest Windows updates are installed, the latest Java is put on, the latest Flash is put on, and the latest Adobe Reader is put on. Those are the things I ensure before I give the customer back the system after any virus removal. I don't just take the virus off and go give it back to them so they can just turn around and do it again.
Right.
Because then they're going to think it's my responsibility as a warranty issue to fix it because they're going to insist I never took it off and I'm going to insist they put it back on. And
right.
nobody's going to be happy.
Yep. No, I agree with that. Yeah. So my attitude is a hard one.
To me, it's like this. Customer will call me and say, I don't understand how I got a virus. I've got Norton antivirus. How's that possible?
Right.
And I say to them, look, what I just heard you say to me as a computer tech is I just got into a car accident. I don't understand. I drive a Volvo. That's not supposed to happen. You cannot just buy a car that's claimed to be the safest car and then exempt yourself from the rules of the road or learning how to drive or taking responsibility behind the wheel. You cannot buy your way out of that. You can't take a pill to make you thinner. You have to put the effort in. So what I'm trying to say is that none of these antivirus protection programs, regardless of cost, will make you exempt from the rules
right.
of making wise decisions behind the keyboard. If you want to drive your Volvo into a tree, it will let you. And Volvo will never make the claim that you may not be seriously injured or killed in one of their cars, regardless of how much they brag about how safe their cars are.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's the analogy I like to use. I like to take something people already know, and I want to use the word dumb it down. I want to make it in a way I would have understood it. I wish somebody would have explained to me. People say, like, well, why do I need a firewall if I already have antivirus? Or why do I need antivirus if I already have a firewall? I go, look, think of antivirus as you would pesticide.
Yep.
And think of a firewall as you would a burglar alarm, right? You know the burglar alarm isn't going to keep out the cockroaches and the pesticide isn't going to keep out the burglars. Well, now, why hasn't anybody ever explained it to me like that before? And I shrug my shoulders. I don't know. Why do we do that in the computer industry? Why do we say backups? Why don't we just say we're making copies? Wouldn't that be less confusing?
That's a good point, because a lot of I've had people, you know, many people, well, why do I have to have a backup? You know, everybody talks about backups all the time, you know, and it's like, well, I know, you know, but, you know, you have to explain to them. And I break it down to a level of when it comes to backups, I'm like, people say, oh, I don't really have anything on there. And I go, you know, I'm on a computer or whatever. I'm like, I said, do you have pictures on here? Well, yeah, I got a lot of pictures on there. I said, if this computer stopped working today and something happened and you lost all those pictures, would you be bummed? And they look at me like, well, yeah, I'd be bummed. That's like 10 years of, you know, my kids and weddings and this and that and the other. And I'm like, well, that's why you have, I said, I'm not telling you have to buy a service for backing up. I said, there's different ways to back up. You know, we can do an external drive here at the house. We can do, you know, an external drive and an online backup, and just back up the things that are important to you that you won't want to lose if something happens. And, you know, when you explain it to people like that, they're like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. Instead of just saying, well, you need to back up. You know, so.
I hate that question. How do I back up? Because I never know how to answer it, because it's like, well, first of all, it's a good question to ask. I'm glad you're concerned enough about it to ask about it, because a lot of people say, well, not a lot of people, but I've run into people that have said, I've never had a problem. Well, good for you. But every hard drive ever made dies. In fact, as far as I can tell, nothing lasts forever. Nothing on this planet. I mean, they say diamonds are forever, but even that, I'm not really sure.
Right. Sure.
But every hard drive ever made will fail. And they often will fail like a light bulb. It worked fine yesterday.
Yep.
But without warning, pop.
That's now,
how do I make a backup? Well, it depends. What do you want to back up? Well, I don't know. What should I back up? I don't know. What's important to you? Do you photos, diaries? And how often should I back up? Well, that's up to you. Well, how is it up to me? Well, you ask yourself, how much stuff have I added since the last time I made a backup? And if I had to restore everything, if everything crashed today, would I be upset over the stuff that I've just added to have to re-add it? If the answer to that question is yes, then that's how often you need to back up.
Right.
I can't answer that question. So they say to me, so I plug a USB drive in my computer and I back it up. No. You just leave the USB drive hooked up all the time? Yeah. Okay. No. So here's the problem. I don't know why you're going to lose your data. Maybe you have a fire. Where's your backup drive going to be? On the computer? Burned in the fire? Someone breaks into your house and steals your computer and everything attached to it, including your USB. You get the CryptoLocker virus. It's going to infect everything on the USB. That's not a good backup. Right. Okay, it is a backup, and that's better than nothing. What would you recommend? Well, go put stuff on the cloud. Well, is that really safe? Well, let me ask you a question. Do you encrypt your data on your backup drive? Do I do what? Okay, so the answer is no.
No.
So if anybody gets a hold of your backup drive, all of your data right there is for them to see without any effort. But if you put it out in the cloud, this thing you're worried about people stealing your data, it's going to be encrypted in a safer way than you're doing it yourself.
Exactly. That's a good point.
Right? So yes, is there a chance? And then who are you and why does anybody care what your data is? I mean, I don't want to be rude, but unless you're a public figure, a celebrity, a politician, who cares? Nobody cares about you.
Right. And
that's the way you want it to be. You don't want people to care about you. So unless it's just a completely random incident, you know, say somebody steals all of Carbonite's database, they still wouldn't be able to unlock the data. It would be like somebody's having a conversation in another language. They could overhear it, but they wouldn't be able to make heads or tails over what was being said. That's what encryption is.
Right.
And so let them have your data. As long as they can't unencrypt it, it'll do them no good. And get it out of the building. So the one thing I can tell you, because there's lots of ways to lose data. You can accidentally delete something. You could get a virus. You can have a hard drive fail. You can have a fire. You could have a theft. You could have a flood. You could have a car careen through your, you know, some drunk driver drives through your house. The one thing that everybody who's ever lost data has in common believe it or not, they all have something in common. None of them expected it. Okay, so that's why we're making copies. That's why we're making backups. So people say, well, why am I putting, if you're saying to me, the reason I'm making my backup is because hard drives fail, then why am I backing it up to another hard drive? Well, ideally, statistically, the likelihood of both hard drives failing at the same time is very, very low.
Right.
But yes, even a flash drive fails. Everything Absolutely. Fails. So what we're talking about here is making copies of important data. So they say, how do I do that? I don't know what's important to you. I don't know how to answer the question. It's just like what you mentioned earlier about people say what PC to buy. It'd be like saying, what car should I buy? Well, I don't know. Do you want a two-seater sports car? Do you want a hybrid? Or do you need four doors? Or maybe an SUV? Maybe you Right. drive around in snow and you need all-wheel drive. Or perhaps you want a four-wheel drive. You want to go off-roading. Or maybe you want something compact with great fuel mileage. Or maybe you want a muscle car. Maybe you want a minivan because you're traveling a lot. Or maybe you need to tow a lot. These questions go on for an hour.
Right, exactly.
So at some point, you just have to say, look, you have to decide what's important to you. Is speed important to you? Or is budget important to you? Or is it both? And if so, at what level?
Right.
So there's all these questions. People email me, they see my YouTube videos, and they go, can you recommend parts for me? I got to talk to you for an hour to an hour and a half before I can recommend anything to you. It's not this one size fits all. Here it is.
Right. Yeah. What are you doing with that computer? What, you know, what types of things do you want to do? Are you gaming? Are you doing Photoshop? Are you,
what's your budget?
Exactly.
Do you want lights on the case? Do you want a small case, or you want to be upgrading this in the future? Or you plan on sticking it in a corner somewhere, a sight unseen? Do you need it to be really quiet? Do you want Windows 7? Do you want Windows 8? Can you afford a solid state drive, or is there a way that we can put a small solid state drive in with a combination mechanical drive? Or is a solid state drive completely out of the question? Or maybe we can go with just a solid state, a 1 terabyte solid state drive, and forget the mechanical hard drive altogether, because that's just a rocket ship like you've never experienced.
And don't tell me that, because I'm debating whether getting an SSD. I'm sorry, I digress.
People say, well, there's no data recovery off an SSD. Well, you know what? And I'm going to kill myself for saying this one day, because I'm going to jinx myself. I've been using SSDs for years, at least 3 or 4 years now, and I have never seen one go bad yet.
All right.
I've seen them get faster, but all the ones I've installed in my clients are still working to this day.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Click. I just heard something. No. That's true. That's the honest truth. So I've got a couple of 500 gig solid state drives I use on my video editing rigs, and they will make the biggest difference in performance, especially if you've got a motherboard with a SATA 6 interface.
Yeah.
The Samsung Evo line that's currently, in my opinion, the best bang for the buck on the solid state drive.
Okay. Yep. I've seen a lot of those.
And they have this great software called Magician, which will automatically optimize the OS and the drive for you to make the little tweaks that you don't have to do those manually. Check for the latest firmware. And it'll do that through Windows. It's not like OCZ where you had to have a boot disk, like a Linux boot disk to update the firmware.
Okay.
And they always say you should always back up your drive first, because the firmware update could erase the drive. Never, ever happened. I've updated firmware more times than I can count, and it just reboots and everything's fine. Which isn't to discourage anybody from ever backing up their data. But the one question or the one comment I get, which cracks me up, is someone will say, you know, my computer's making noise, so I thought I better back it up. No, do not wait for your computer to make noise before you go to back it up. That's like, well, I just, I see I'm heading for that pole.
Maybe I should turn.
Snow. Let me call the insurance company real quick. Because I didn't need the insurance until just now. You don't wait until you need it. It's all about being prepared for the worst and hoping for the best, hoping you never need it. And services like Carbonite, where it's putting it out to the cloud, are great if it's just data you want to back up. You can use Facebook what is it? Snapfish. There's a bunch of Flickr photo places you can use for free.
Exactly.
Where you can upload your photos completely for free. Videos, you can use YouTube and you can make the videos private so that you're not making them out to the public. That's a good form of backup.
That's a good point.
So these are huge files I'm talking about. So music and videos can be, you're not going to be able to put copyrighted content on YouTube. They have auto detection routines. So if you have that latest copy of Friends, your favorite episode, you can't put that on YouTube because they'll detect it and remove it, even if it's private.
Right. Okay. That's a good point.
But on stuff that you didn't create, you can always go and get that again. What we're worried about backing up is the stuff that you created, your pictures, your data.
Right.
That's the stuff that's irreplaceable, not the stuff that you could go and get again. We're not worried about backing up Microsoft Office. You can reinstall Microsoft Office.
Well, and I think a lot of people too, is I've run into a lot of customers that will tell me they're, well, I keep all my pictures on this external drive.
Mm.
Or all my music on this external drive. And I go, yeah. I go, so, but is it that's still on the laptop? Copy. And they're no. like, no, I dragged it all off and I don't keep anything on a laptop. I want that to run good. I said, listen, you do not have a backup unless it's at least in two places at one time. You need it on your laptop and an external drive. That way, if either one of them fails, you have your information that you can get to. And preferably from my standpoint, I think this is standard backup. For a lot of people, they might seem like it's overkill. I do online backup and I do a backup on an external drive right here so that if something does happen and the other drive's still fine, I can get my data back quickly.
Yep.
If not, I at least have it in the cloud that I can get it down eventually. It's, especially the important things that I need, to run my day-to-day, business or just the things that I do on my computer.
I do the same thing, except I have some clients who are managed services that I provide for. And what I have for them are three USB portable drives, the laptop size drives that don't require any power. And I leave one plugged into the computer at the office. I take one to my office and I give one to the owner of the company. And I will log in remotely every weekend and initiate a file synchronization from the server to the backup drive. So it only backs up files that have changed or deletes files that aren't there anymore.
Okay.
And then once a week or every other week, I drive to the other side of town, take my backup drive with me and trade it for the one that's there at the office that I've already remotely backed up. So I just have to walk in, swap out the cables and walk out. And then about once every 3 months, I put a note on the drive, leave it on the owner's desk and say, please bring home the one you have at home and exchange it with this one. And then when he brings it back, that one becomes the one at the office. The one at the office, I bring home to my office. So there's a constant rotation so that if anything happens at the office, we have the backup. I have it. If anything happens to me, the owner has it. If the employee gets really ticked off, if some employee gets ticked off and I'm going to delete the server in the backup, I have it and the owner has it. Now, the owner's is going to be up to 3 months old. Mine's going to be up to a week to 2 weeks old. But in the scope of years and years and years of data, we're talking 750,000 files.
Sure.
Losing 5,000 files is still going to suck. Don't get me wrong. But
it's better than
to
nothing.
Back up more than that starts costing more money. So
right.
At some point you say, which cost? Does it cost more for me to back this up or does it cost more for me to recreate it?
Right.
And that's a decision that has to be made uniquely depending on the situation. And yeah, we could buy a backup drive for every day, but then we're going to have a place to store those drives. We need a way to label those drives. We could do versioning, but if we do versioning, the laptop drive sizes are going to be too small with 750,000 files. We're going to fill it up. We're just going to fill the drive up. That's not going to work very well.
Exactly.
So we have, but the benefit of being able to have a backup that's 3 months old is that 2 months later, they realize a folder got deleted accidentally. And I go, oh, you know what? Well, let's get the owner's backup drive because his is 2 months old. It'll still have the data on it. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
There's a balance, but it still has risk. And all we're trying to do is take the calculated risk. There's right. still, there's no complete safety net that doesn't become overkill in labor and cost to offset what it would cost you, say, to fix this pile of crap car versus buying a new car.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. You're right. Each individual has to come up with that. And I think it comes down to, you have to ask yourself the question, could I live without this data?
Yes.
If it were to disappear today,
you're going to live without it. You're going to live without it, whether you like it or not.
Right.
The question is, will you like it?
Well, that's true.
Much will you like it? Will you like it $100 worth, $200 worth? Because that's what it comes down to. It's almost, there was a comedian that talked about veterinarians and bringing their pets to the vet. I wish I could remember the comedian. And they'd say, well, your cat's got leukemia and it's going to cost this much money for surgery. And what it boils down to is you don't want to spend that much money on the cat. So we got to put the cat down. Or maybe you don't have it to spend. But it gets down to that issue. We love the cat, but we got to let it go.
Right.
But if the surgery was $100, we love the cat and we're going to have the surgery. The data is similar in that how much do you love your data? The proof is in the pudding by how much you're willing to spend and how much effort you're willing to take. The less effort you're willing to take, the more money you're going to have to spend or the more risk you're going to have to assume. Okay.
Exactly.
So if you're willing to do all of it yourself, you can save money and get yourself a couple of backup drives and do it yourself. If you want to pay a service like Carbonite or Mosey, then you don't have to worry about failed hard drives. When their drives fail, it's up to them to fix it. You don't have to be bothered with it. But year after year after year, it's going to cost you more. But it'll at least get your essential stuff.
Exactly.
Or you can do nothing at all and just roll the dice. And when it happens, it happens.
Right. Oh, exactly.
Or it doesn't happen.
Right.
I mean, if that's your personality, far be it for me to tell you it's right or wrong.
Right.
But those are the options.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, hey, Kerry, I think we've covered a boatload of topics
here.
We were
today. All over the place, weren't we?
And yeah, but you know, it was good stuff that we talked about today. I think a lot of people will get a lot of good information about, you know, not only how you do different business tactics and different things that you use in your business and kind of what works for you. And you know, talking about getting into business and just letting other people out there know that they can, you know, they can start their business. And I think you laid it out very simply of buying the tools when you need them. And just going from there and just, you know what, just start doing
business.
Something. Start getting the business. Yep. Don't worry about all this other stuff.
There was an email I received that this guy emailed me and basically said, you know, he's been a carpenter all his life. He's 44 years old. Also lives in Michigan. Coincidentally, a lot of Michigan folks.
Yeah.
and he says, do you think I'm too old? Because I don't have all the years of experience you have at your age.
Wait, how old? Oh, he's got to be. He's probably
in his 44. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess he's 44.
Oh, did he work? He worked 44 years. Didn't you say?
He says, I know I don't know it all. You're right. He's got to be older than 44. He mentions he was in Vietnam. He says, I don't have the 44 years that it took me to learn my current trade. So he's been in his trade for 44 years.
Okay.
So he's got to be in his 50s. It seems to me that as fast as computer knowledge is growing, it seems the best time to jump in is anywhere along the stream and start paddling. Am I right at that point of buying online courses from Total Seminars to get the A+ certification? I guess his main question, he says, is am I too old? I don't think you're ever too old. I think you're only as old as you feel. You're going to appeal to a certain... Here's what I thought was interesting. My YouTube videos. It seems like all the comments are being left by teenagers. So I wrongfully assume the majority of my viewers are teens, but they're not.
Right.
The YouTube analytics show the majority of my viewers are between 40 and 60 or something like that, which is right in my peer group. I didn't know that. They just aren't as vocal, apparently, as the younger users. So that gave me the wrong impression of who my audience really was.
Yeah.
That said, that I don't think age is a factor. Yes, technology is always changing. Yes, you're right to just jump in the stream and start paddling. Because when I was working for the man, and I would see these classified ads in the paper for jobs wanted, because that's how we did it back then, they would say they wanted 5 years of experience. And I'd be like, well, why do they want 5 years of experience? Is their equipment 5 years old?
Right.
It doesn't apply. The stuff 5 years ago doesn't apply today. Don't you want somebody with current experience?
Right, exactly.
So I don't think age is a factor. Ultimately, I think what matters is that you do what you enjoy doing. I think it's a shame that if you've got 44 years in doing something, you're probably really, really good at it, very proficient, one would assume. That to throw that all away and start over, I think, is kind of a shame because you already have a skill. But if you have burned out on it, you want to do something different. I think I'm a true believer that you can do anything you set your mind to, and it has nothing to do with age. And I think somebody who's in their 50s or 60s is probably going to have a lot more customers in their peer group. And I think somebody who's like 16 years old, just getting started, is going to have folks that are, I don't want to say in his peer group, but are like somehow related to his peer group. They might be parents of a friend or a teacher or, you know, that sort of thing in that environment that they live in the world that they're in.
Right.
And I don't think that, like, for example, when I go to the senior centers to fix computers, I don't see teenage kids there.
Exactly.
Fixing computers.
Right.
So there's a spot for everybody. Yeah, everybody's, the trick is to make your own niche. And if I could, I have no affiliation with this, but there's a great book called The Pumpkin Plan. And it's all about how to grow your business. And it doesn't matter what kind of business it is, because the bottom line is every business runs the same, has the same problems. A restaurant, you can have the best chef in the world, but if people don't know you exist, how do you get people to come to your restaurant? Right?
Yep.
And you can be a great tech, but if you don't have customers and people don't know you're a tech, how do you get the business? So all businesses pretty much have the same problem, that is getting the customer. And it's actually, you know, delivering the food at the restaurant's the easy part, or, you know, collecting the bill at the end's the easy part. It's getting that customer. Now, can somebody in their 50s or 60s or 40s or 30s get a customer easier or harder than somebody in different? Absolutely not. It is, if anything, you will have better social experience, more social experience as you're older. That may put you in tune with larger corporations and bigger responsibilities than perhaps what would be laid on the shoulders of somebody 20.
Well, let me answer this question from a standpoint, because I think I know exactly where this guy is coming from now that I think about it, because I'm kind of in the same boat. He has 44 years, and it sounds like he's a union carpenter, you know, a trade carpenter. And so he's probably at retirement age, and he's probably, I think everybody gets to a point where maybe they don't want to swing a hammer or do certain things anymore, because it gets harder. And I know, because I used to do, you know, remodeling and stuff like that, and I still dabble in it a little bit, but to be honest with you, I can't stand it anymore. I'd rather sit down in front of a computer and click a couple buttons and work on a machine or turn a screwdriver or something like that. It's very low key. So, in the next 9 years, I'm going to be able to retire from my job. And that's part of why I do my business now, is so that I can take that, what I'm learning right now, and go ahead and continue in doing computer repair. But one of the things I know for sure is that it's going to constantly change over the next 10 years. And even if he gets in today, he's going to be able to hit a whole different group of people, like I think you were saying, in his age group, a lot of people that don't want to learn a lot of that stuff. And he's going to be able to help them out and make a nice little, you know, income doing that. And I think that's a great plan, because I think what happens is, and I kind of see where he's at too, because you don't want to ever just sit back and do nothing. And if you, I don't either. And I always have to be constantly learning and doing things and making myself better day after day. And so, yeah, you're never too old to learn something new. And this is something, if you go back through the history books, you will look at some of the greatest inventions. Actually, most of the greatest inventions were made by people in their 70s and 80s.
Have you seen a young picture of Thomas Edison holding a light bulb? Or
absolutely not.
Have you seen a young picture of Albert Einstein?
So you look at what's accomplished when you get older. Here's what you have going for you. You have wisdom. you know that you can learn from other people, and you can maybe make some shortcuts. But you know what? Bottom line is, Carrie said it earlier, you know what? Sometimes you're still going to fall off your bike and smash your face. Sometimes you might still get burned, you know, but it's all part of the learning process, and there's nothing wrong with that.
It's all about motivation and desire.
Exactly. Yep.
That's what we can't give you.
Right.
And if you have that, then the answer is yes, you can do it.
Absolutely.
And if you're not certain if you have it, that's an inward search you're going to have to do on your own to decide. My best advice is do what you love. And I just want to, I know we're probably running long and you can edit this, but one other thing I wanted to bring up is I hear people saying, well, aren't PCs going away because cell phones and tablets are, the sales of that are up and PCs are down. And so doesn't that mean that shouldn't I learn how to fix that? Because that's where the repair is going to go. No, Here's what I want you to do. The next time you read an article online that says PCs are going away and smartphones and tablets are taking over, write the author of the article and ask them what they wrote that article on. I will bet you they wrote it on a PC and you read it on your tablet or your smartphone. Tablets and smartphones are devices for consuming information and data.
Absolutely.
PCs, laptops, these are things used to create the data that people will use on their smartphone. You cannot have a smartphone or a tablet without the computer to create what you're going to see on it. Computers are not going anywhere. Ford is not designing the next new Fiesta on a tablet. They are not designing the new World Trade Center on a smartphone. That is never going to happen. The electric company is not have their billing software automatically determine your electric bill and send it out in the mail through an iPad.
Right.
Let's not confuse consumer devices with the workplace. And the workplace is where the money's at for a tech, consistent money anyway.
Yes.
And not that you couldn't make consistent money with a residential client, but you need hundreds of residential clients versus a handful of commercial clients.
Exactly.
And so, no, the PC is not going anywhere. It's going to be around a very, very long time. And the people who are buying the tablets and the smartphones are the ones who aren't creating. And that's okay. Nothing wrong with that. But before that, they had to buy a PC, even if they were just consuming.
Right.
But now, absolutely, since they don't have to, you know, they can have it portable. It's interesting how that the authors of these articles have skewed the data to come to this incorrect conclusion. One of my favorites was John Dvorak was talking about when Facebook was bragging about how many people were signed up for Facebook. He said, at this current growth rate, in 3 months' time, they will have twice the population of Earth signed up at Facebook. Anyway, I just had to leave you with that.
No, that's awesome, Kerry. I appreciate that. And I totally 100% agree with you. Computers are not going away. And yeah, the consumer devices, the mobile devices, they're great for doing the consumption, entertainment, you know, different things like that. But guess what? I love still doing things on my computer. And, you know, and as I get older, I don't really want to look at a smaller device anyway. So I like the bigger screen.
What do you do with that smartphone? Oh, I watch movies on it. Really? Because I'd rather watch that movie with the $100 million special effects budget on my big HD TV, you know, exactly, 1080p, 56-inch screen, not on a... See, me, this is, I think, part of getting older, but things seem to be going a little backwards.
And like, I think, yes.
With texting, like, I see people texting. Texting's fine if it's like, hey, I'm on my way.
Right.
I'm running 15 minutes late. But to have a full conversation, wouldn't it just be easier to pick up the phone and talk?
Yes.
And my joke is that what are the next generation of kids going to do? Go to Morse code? You're going to be like... I'm like, really? And then what? We're going to have a blanket and some fire and send some smoke signals. I mean, it seems like a step backwards to me. But then I realized I hear my dad in my voice when my dad would say things to me about new kids today. But, yeah, you know, I text. But there comes to be a point when someone's texting me where I'm just like, pick up the phone and call me. I don't want to have this whole conversation in a text. This is just a pain in the butt. I don't want to watch a movie on a 3-inch screen. You know, I remember those little 3-inch screens from the 80s, and it was a big deal. And now we have huge, you know, 60, 70, 80-inch TVs. Wouldn't you rather watch it on that? But if I live somewhere where I did a lot of public transportation and waiting, like a subway or a bus or something, I would certainly want to bide my time through, you know, entertaining myself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Smartphone or a Kindle or something like that. That's great.
There's different tools that people use for different things, and I don't think any one thing is going away. I think that you're gonna have multiple tools that you can use for different experiences. I've got a phone in front of me, a smartphone. I've got a little 7-inch tablet in front of me. I don't know why, and I've got a 30-inch monitor in front of me. You know, in front of that. So, and I've got a laptop sitting to the side. But you know, I use them all for different things, and some work better than others for certain types of things.
And I don't want to be misconstrued in saying that there's no money to be made in fixing tablets and smartphones. There is. But I don't think that you have to.
Right.
You don't have to feel compelled to have to learn it. I think you should do what you love. And if you love fixing tablets and smartphones and PCs, then that's what you should do. If you're like me and you just like PCs, I mean, that's how I've carved out my living. It's just in my passion for PCs. And I've taken apart some small devices, and the little plastic clips break and screens are glued on. And it's just much less, it's cheaper to just go buy a new one than what my time is worth that I could have been making fixing a PC instead.
Exactly. Yeah. The smallest I go is a laptop, and I've tried the mobile devices, and it's not for me. It's not what I love to do.
Yeah. If you love what you do, it doesn't matter if it takes you 4 hours.
Exactly.
Because you love it.
Yep.
So that's what you, in my opinion, that's what you should follow. And
absolutely.
And thanks to, you know, podcasts like yours now, people have this guidance that I certainly didn't have. I don't know if you had it, but I didn't have it at all when I got started. So I'm hoping that the next generation of techs that are starting up can take it to a level much, much quicker. They can grow their business much faster than it took me. That's my motivation, to see it evolve faster.
Absolutely. Oh, that's great advice, Kerry. Hey, if anyone wanted to get in contact with you, what would be the best way for them to contact you?
They can, at our Tech Vets page, Veterans of Technology, we talk about the trials and tribulations of running a computer repair business. That's myself and Mike Smith of the Mike Tech Show. And we do that about every 2 weeks. And we have our email there that you can reach out to us there. And then, of course, if you want to check out any of my videos, they're how-to videos, mostly for novices, some product reviews. My YouTube channel is just, I actually just forwarded my homepage to my YouTube channel. So kerryholzman.com will take you right to my YouTube channel, where I have over 100 videos, some better than others.
They're all fun to watch.
Not good at all, depending on who you talk to. And they're all free. So if you don't like them, you can get your money back. But
there you go.
those would be the best ways to find me.
Okay, awesome. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us today. It's been wonderful talking to you and just kind of sharing. And I hope the same thing, that people get stuff out of this. And that's why we do what we do. Hey, and I just want to let you guys know, you can find me on Google+ at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, please email us at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping in Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Remember, that doesn't change your price. It puts a little change in the pockets of the Podnuts Network to help bring you these awesome shows. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
D72 is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.